89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The DSW Black Friday sale is on. Take 30% off almost everything in stores and online right now. Yep, you heard that right, 30% off. Stock up on new shoes, bags, and extras for you and yours from all the gift-worthy brands you love. But hurry, Black Friday can't last forever. Get to your DSW store or DSW.com ASAP to save big. Exclusions apply. Details at DSW.com.
The holidays are coming, and everything's aglow. Give your loved one a reason to sparkle with jewelry from Blue Nile. Right now, Blue Nile is offering special Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals. Save up to 50% on the season's most stunning trends. Or keep it classic with an endless selection of bold gold styles, gemstone jewelry, and eternally stylish diamond pieces. Shop now for up to 50% off jewelry at BlueNile.com, the original online jeweler. That's BlueNile.com, BlueNile.com.
Oh my God, it's the coolest thing ever. Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? Well, check this out. It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic famous foods from restaurants across the country anywhere nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. They ship Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. Seriously. So if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT.
And welcome, everybody, to this week's exciting episode.
Yep.
And Josh is taking the lead today. I've got to say, I have a little trepidation over your choice in subject, but I'm trusting you.
Well, I mean, I should
It is a scary one, isn't it?
It is scary because we've all heard the horror stories of a bit of backlash on this subject.
Other podcasts have covered it, and they have tales to tell.
They do, yeah.
So what are we doing this week then, Josh?
Today we are doing Scientology.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I'd just like to say, with the research, to avoid some comments and people saying, oh, this is my religion and that's not right and this is not right, some of the research is actually from a Scientologist website.
I'd say most of it, is it?
I'd say...
I know you went visited Wikipedia, which obviously, you know, it has to confirm things before they put them out and whatnot.
I would say maybe 30% is from the Scientologist website.
From their actual website?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, one of their .orgs or whatever it is.
Okay.
So, you know, before we get any hate, there is some research there that is from those websites. That,
fair enough.
But also, I should just say as well, I've done so much research, this is going to be a two-parter.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay,
and part one
That should be interesting. I don't think we've had a religion episode that spans two parts yet.
I mean, we need it. We need it with this, because the deep dive in Scientology gets very deep.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, it is going to be a two-parter, so stick around, because part two is going to be even juicier. Part one is going to be the history and the facts and more. It's interesting.
The introduction to it, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
well, let's dive in then,
let's
mate.
Let's dive in. Now, as we chatted about before the podcast, we both got L. Ron Hubbard wrong. So yes. It's the initial L, Ron Hubbard.
Yeah. I thought L. Ron was one word.
Yeah, L. Ron beginning with E.
Yeah.
And I thought he was L. Ron Hubbard, as in the Ron Hubbard. So we were both wrong. But L. Ron Hubbard was born in Tilden, Nebraska, in America. And the L stands for Lafayette.
Mm.
I think that's how you say it.
It is.
So yes. Lafayette Ronald Hubbard. And he was born on March 13th, 1911. And he died January 24th, 1986. And he was an American author primarily known for science fiction and fantasy stories. So,
okay. So he had a bit of a name for himself all the way back in the old days then.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So he actually still to this day holds the record for the most published like books and novels and just general...
In the sci-fi genre.
Yeah.
And outside of it?
Or... Yeah, non-fiction yeah, yeah. and fiction. Yeah, okay. So he's just released book after book and whatever, novels and whatever.
Throws them out like Stephen King does these days.
Yeah.
He's the original Stephen King.
Yeah, he is, yeah. And he was actually... He specified in science fiction is yeah, basically fair what it enough. Is.
Yeah, that was his jam.
Yeah, which makes sense as the creator of Scientology. So in 1950, Hubbard authored a book called Dianetics, which is the modern right. science of mental health. But in 1952, Hubbard lost the rights to Dianetics in a bankruptcy proceeding. He subsequently founded Scientology thereafter.
Okay.
Hubbard also oversaw the growth of the Church of Scientology into a worldwide organization. And just a couple of little key points here, just to try and paint a picture of L. Ron Hubbard, because he's not 100% nice of a person, I have to say.
Okay.
Not that this has anything to do with it. He dropped out of George Washington University, so never finished university.
Right, didn't get his degree.
No, he was arrested for petty theft in 1948, and he was arrested for fraud in France in 1978.
What a stand-up guy.
Yeah, he also received a fine of $35,000 and 4 years in jail, but they were unserved.
Oh.
Couldn't find anything on that as to why.
No.
I don't know whether he served some of that time, but from my research, I don't think he served any time in jail.
Maybe. Was that in France? Or?
Yeah, he got so done for fraud.
Skip the country and just get out of his
I'm
jail.
I'm pretty sure that's perhaps. What happened. Yeah.
Oh, fair play.
So, but it was France that
allegedly. Anyway,
allegedly. Yeah,
we can't say that it did because yeah, if that's not in the research, we can't say that that is what actually happened, can we? But there's a good chance.
Yes, but this did happen, and he served in the U.S. Navy from 1941 to 1945, and was a reserve for another 5 years after that. He served in World War II and made it all the way up to rank of lieutenant.
Yeah, well, he would have done from 1941 to 45. Yeah, definitely. In fact, yeah, he was there pretty much right to the end.
Yeah, yeah. So he is a veteran, I suppose.
Yeah.
So he did serve his country. So kind of, yeah, respect
yeah,
for that.
Yeah, respect for that. You know? Yeah.
So after dropping out of GWU, he began his career as a prolific writer of pulp fiction stories. And he also married a woman called Margaret Grubb, who shared an interest in aviation. So, and I'm going kind of quick because I've got 7 pages of research.
Yeah, I know. You didn't really mention much of his interest in aviation because he was in the Navy.
Yeah.
So he was,
but
on,
he
boats,
was on
boats.
He was on boats.
Or was he on an aircraft carrier? I suppose we don't know, do we? Or was that, is that true?
This is the other thing. This guy is so all over the place and nuts, with all due respect.
Right.
He's into a lot of stuff.
Right.
So, but he was mainly interested in ships, being part of the Navy. But that's the only bit that I could find where it says he had an interest in aviation and that's how he met his wife. But we don't know. Was it just a pickup line to get her because he knew that she was into it? We don't know. That's
hey,
the
baby,
thing.
I work on an aircraft carrier. Want to come jump on mine?
Are we at an airport? Because my heart is taking off.
Oh.
So, so they actually had 2 children as well.
Okay.
And little fun fact, a Margaret Grubb is an anagram of Bartram Bugger. And I've done that myself. So I'm proud of that one. I even drew a little smiley face on the research.
I could see it. That's very, nuts. Fair enough.
And then him and Margaret divorced in 1947. And his second wife, he married Sarah Betty Hollister. And they had one child, but also divorced 5 years later. We will get back to Betty because she comes back into it.
Okay.
But I'm just trying to give you a little bit of background to show that, you know, he's been married a few times.
So, yeah, so far...
He's got children.
He's been done for fraud.
Yep.
He's gone to, may or may not have served time in prison.
Yeah.
Or may have skipped the country.
Yeah.
We don't know. He fought in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
He's been married twice and had three kids with two different women so far.
Yes.
Right. Colourful guy.
Yeah. And also at the same time...
few skeletons in his closet, I'd say.
Yeah, and still, whilst all this is going on, he's still writing all these science fiction novels and producing of these books and entertainment and reading material.
I suppose if that's his first love, then yeah, I suppose...
So, and also, I will give out these little... I just got what you said. I will read out these kind of facts and then bring them into a timeline, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah, so, yeah, that's fine.
So in 1953, the first churches of Scientology were founded by Hubbard. And in 1954, a Scientology church in Los Angeles was founded, which became the Church of Scientology International, which then later became... Gold Base, which is their central hub of Scientology. Now,
the international headquarters.
So now this is where I'm kind of trying to put the timeline
into place.
Into place,
Because
typically with the Josh style, as I'm doing research, I tend to go back and write little notes and go back, and then it gets a bit jumbled up.
Yeah.
And I've got a history of getting my notes in the wrong order. So... now I'm going to rewrite those mistakes and try and put it into some sort of time frame.
Fair enough.
So,
good luck.
Yeah, good luck. If people are still following me. Scientology became increasingly controversial during the 1960s and came to intense media, government and legal pressure in a number of countries. During the late 1960s and early 1970s, Hubbard spent much of his time at sea on his personal fleet of ships as Commodore of the Sea Organization, an elite quasi-paramilitary group of Scientologists. And you heard that correctly. He had his own fleet, which does come back up in the story later.
Of paramilitary?
Yeah. Yes.
As you've got his own, basically a bunch of mercenaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Scientologists.
To defend it. He's made quite a lot of money off Scientology by this point, but I'm not going to try and step ahead.
Yeah, it'll all click into place. This next bit might put into perspective.
You didn't say what they... You said they came under scrutiny in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't say what for. I don't know whether that's coming
that
up.
That's coming up.
Get out of my head, pirate, yeah. But... to say that he went out into the middle of the sea with his own fleet of paramilitary, it must have been something pretty serious for him to actually get out of the country into international waters.
Yeah, he was wanted by a lot of people for different things. And
That's shady, man.
Yeah, and his fleet as well, they were centred around three huge naval ships.
He actually bought ships off the Navy?
Somehow, some way, he had his own ships. I don't know if he bought them.
Decommission them, he must have had the money to go, yeah, I'll take them. But
he had his own fleet, which is impressive. So Hubbard returned to the United States in 1975, which I think is maybe just before the whole France thing. Either way, he was off on sea, going round different countries. He returned in 1975 to the United States and went into seclusion in the Californian desert after an unsuccessful attempt to take over the town of Clearwater in Florida.
An unsuccessful attempt to take over a town?
Yes. With Scientology.
Right. Well, he was just trying to sort of the video games, like Civ 6 or whatever, where you go and try and make a religious victory. He was just trying to convert all these different places to his religion.
Pretty much, yeah. And
to pretty much back up his paramilitary group.
yeah, and that's what I was going to
say. The more numbers you've got, the better, isn't it?
Allegedly, there was some force used in certain situations and things because he wasn't getting his own way.
Doesn't surprise me.
But he was unsuccessful anyway. So in 1978, after his conviction of fraud in France, in the same year, 11 high-ranking members of Scientology were indicted on 28 charges for their role in the church's Snow White program. Right. So this is where, you know, when you said about what they were in trouble for in the 1960s?
Yeah.
It's kind of a build-up.
The Snow White program is...
Well, the Snow
project
White
name, is it? Or?
Yeah, so the Snow White program was like late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But during the 60s, building up to this into the 70s, it was kind of like he was doing all these crimes and all of these dodgy things building up to the Snow
just
White.
Basically, forgive me, this is the way it sounds, is he was trying to make himself like a cartel or a mob boss.
In a way, yeah.
You know, that's
allegedly.
Allegedly. This is my understanding of what you're telling me. My personal understanding is that the guy is trying to create a cartel with himself as the Don, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, he is. Yeah, and this next bit will make even more sense to what you're saying.
Yeah, that's my take on this these historical facts. Anyway, mm-hmm. I may be wrong, but yeah.
So 11 people got done for this with 28 charges for their role in the Snow White program, a systematic program of espionage against the United States government, infiltrations and thefts into 136 agencies and foreign embassies and consultants in more than 30 countries, including organizations critical to Scientology. It was one of the largest infiltrations of the United States government in history.
Yeah.
So his group of Scientologists were, it says here.
You've got worms and moles inside government, basically.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. So this was all to purge and eliminate any unfavorable records about Scientology and the founder, L. Ron Hubbard.
So yeah, just strip them from the record.
Yes.
Clean slate.
So again, we're just painting a picture here of what the religion.
Dodgy as hell, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And one of the indicted members was his third wife, Mary Sue Whip, called Whip, who she had.
Is that one good?
It had to be. It's spelt the same as well. Silent H. So she also had four children with L. Ron Hubbard.
So he's up to seven kids now.
I think it's either six or seven. One, two. I think it is seven.
Seven.
Yeah. And she was actually in charge of the program.
One of them came up to him and went, "Where's my money, Brian? Where's my money?
Where's my money, Brian?" But yeah, she had another four kids with him, and she actually did get in trouble for the Snow White program because she was in charge of it. He put her in charge.
She was Snow White.
Yeah, and
would make sense with a name like Cool Whip.
So Hubbard spent the remaining years of his life in seclusion in a luxury motorhome on a ranch in California, attended to by a small group of Scientology officials. Following his death in 1986, Scientology leaders announced that Hubbard's body had become an impediment to his work?
Impediment.
That's the one. Had become an impediment to his work, and that he decided to drop his body to continue his research and teachings on another plane of existence. The Church of Scientology describes Hubbard in holy... What's that say?
Oh.
Hagiographic terms?
Hagiographic terms, yeah.
And says its account of his life is factual.
Right.
So,
what, these stories that he just left lying around?
Yeah, basically. So this is the start of actual Scientology and their kind of beliefs, where they're starting to say that he was actually like a holy entity. He wasn't just a man in a body. He was beyond his
body. He was a prophet.
He was
what they're
prophet.
Saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay.
And like we've
I guess people are going to believe what they believe, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, like Jesus was a man, Muhammad was a man, you know, but the various religions, they believe in these prophets as something more than what they were, and it's going to be the same for these people, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's actually incredible how brainwashed some of these people are. Not all of them, allegedly, but it's a very amazing how he managed to do what he could do.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And
he's not the first one, though. Well, he might have been one of the first, but I mean, we've seen plenty of other religious movements that have been very controlling environments.
Yeah.
Because there was that one that did the religious suicide and everything. The biggest, biggest suicide in history, mass suicide in history.
Yeah, it was. And they all drank like punch or something.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. Well, this is the same sort of thing. He's indoctrinating people into this belief.
Yeah, pretty much.
But that's how all religion starts, anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, you tend to have one.
Jesus was a fisher of men, basically going around spreading his story, indoctrinating people. You know, it's just one way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you are right. And we've already touched on the fact L. Ron Hubbard is the world's most published and most translated author, with having published over 1,084 fiction and non-fiction works, and they've been translated into 71 different languages.
Wow.
So that's quite impressive, to be fair.
Yeah.
And here's a little side note for you. So he was also best friends with Jack Parsons, who invented the first rocket engine to use a castable composite rocket propellant.
Right.
So it wasn't just him. There was other people involved, but his name is credited to that. So
castable composite rocket propellant.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
Solid fuel.
I'm guessing, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing they already had some sort of system in place. Him and a team, I think there was three people on the team. He was like the leader of the team, like team leader.
Yeah.
And they said, try using XYZ, and it worked, and they've used that ever since, is what I got from the research. But that there is the science.
Just a rocket propellant threw me off, because obviously Wernher von Braun was the major developer of rockets after the Second World War for America.
Yeah.
And he was the guy that kind of brought the ICBM, the Intercontinental Ballistic Missile, into existence, because he was the guy that figured out rocket science enough to actually travel those distances. I'm guessing this guy must have worked closely with him.
I'm guessing so, because they met early on in L. Ron Hubbard's career. So I don't know if at this
point... Oh, so
point,
yeah, it quite possibly was just after the war then. So yeah, that's how he made those connections. Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, that makes more sense to me now.
And then just a little side note here. Again, just trying to paint a picture, but also not just painting a picture. Like, these are facts. You know, this is history of L. Ron Hubbard. He actually met his second wife by having an affair with Parsons' girlfriend, so Sarah Betty, who later became Hubbard's second wife. And this is the other thing. When he married his second wife, he was still married to his first wife.
Oh, so bigamist too?
Yes.
Is that part of the religion? Are you, like, Mormons and stuff are allowed to take more than one wife, aren't they? And,
yeah.
You know, is that part of Scientology?
Or? I've never heard of Scientologists being, what did you say, bigamists?
Bigamists, yeah. Or
yeah, never heard of it.
Polygamists, I think they call themselves, don't they?
Yeah.
No, it can't be, because I'm pretty sure... I'm not sure when it was. It might have been the 70s or the 80s or maybe even earlier. The United States actually banned polygamy.
Mm-hmm.
And there are still sort of religious movements that sort of do it quietly, if you know what I mean, in their own little reserves and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm with you, secretly.
Yeah.
But I actually feel a little bit sorry for Margaret, because she actually didn't find out until well into his second marriage. So he was leading a double life.
Okay.
She then found out, and she basically had to agree to divorce him, if you know what I mean.
That is true bigamy then, if you're leading a second marriage in secret. That's not polygamy, that is bigamy.
Yeah. But you'd be happy to know as well, Jack Parsons didn't blame him at all. They actually stayed friends.
Oh, right.
And I should have written the quote down, but it was a very weird quote saying something along the lines of, he's a great guy, and it just means that the transfer of energy from her to me goes from her to him. Something along those lines. So he wasn't bothered at all.
Right,
so.
Yeah. Okay. So it obviously, yeah, it probably is written into the clauses of their religion somewhere that you can just go and sleep with anyone, whether you're married or not. I don't
know. So after...
I don't know.
I've got no idea. But after complaining about not being able to make a decent living as a science fiction writer, Lester Del Rey told Hubbard that to get rich, he needed to start his own religion. And
right.
Lester Del Rey was also a fellow science fiction writer.
Okay.
Like an established author as well.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
So
yeah.
Close friend. I mean,
you get like tax exemptions and stuff if you're a religious minister and, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's quite a scheme. It's quite a clever scheme.
Yeah. And Hubbard then expanded upon the basics of his first published kind of thing, which was Dianetics, which he lost the rights to. When he got it back, he just expanded upon that to construct a spiritually orientated doctrine based on the concept that the true self of a person was a thetan, which, in other words, is like an immortal person or entity.
Basically. Okay, yeah, your soul.
Yeah, so...
The true essence of you is your soul, and the body is just a carriage for it.
Yes.
That's what you're saying. Yeah. Same with most religions.
Yeah.
Same thing.
But thetan, it comes up quite a lot. So
okay.
Thetan is the word that he uses for a mortal entity, like you said, soul. So Hubbard taught that thetans, having created the material universe, have forgotten their godlike powers and become trapped in physical bodies. Scientology has aimed to rehabilitate each person's self to restore its own original capacities and become once again an operating thetan, becoming a mortal or an entity.
So transcending your physical body into a purely spiritual form.
Yes. Yeah.
Is their goal.
Essentially, yes. That is what the very bottom...
You know what the rest of us call that?
What's that?
Dying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically.
But that is the very heart and soul, the core of their religion is
fair
what
enough.
I just said.
Yeah.
So let me just have a quick sip.
Picture this, you're halfway through a DIY car fix, tools scattered everywhere, and boom, you realise you're missing a part. It's okay, because you know whatever it is, it's on eBay. They've got everything, brakes, headlights, cold air intakes, whatever you need, and it's guaranteed to fit, which means no more crossing your fingers and hoping you ordered the right thing. All the parts you need at prices you'll love, guaranteed to fit every time. eBay, things people love.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Yeah, most of us would agree that that's what happens at the end of our lives anyway.
Mm-hmm.
In one religion or another. I don't know about the atheists, whether some of them believe that kind of thing or not. Where a lot of them just really believe that when you die, it's just black, nothingness. Very empty belief system there. But I don't know, many, many religions, many beliefs hold pretty much that same ideal, really. But they just call it dying.
Yeah, and that's the very basic mild version of what they believe in.
Right.
Part two, I will actually go into all the crazy stuff they believe in.
Right.
Well, allegedly crazy.
Allegedly crazy. Yeah.
Just to avoid backlash there, but honestly, it is nuts. Allegedly. So, but this is another thing. Allegedly, plagiarism comes into it. So,
right.
In 2012, Ohio State University professor Hugh Urban argued that Hubbard had adopted many of his theories of Scientology from the early to mid-20th century astral projection pioneer Sylvan Muldoon. So similar, if not identical, to the literature of Muldoon from 1951. So essentially,
okay.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but astral projection is kind of like, do you remember the Ingo Swan episode mm-hmm. where you travel outside of your body and visit things that you're not able to visit in actual corporeal form?
Yeah.
But that's not the same as transcending to become your, what was it, thetan immortal entity.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of different.
I think, well, we haven't read the whole thing. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay, so, maybe I'm missing something there, but
that's what I'm thinking as well. Like, I do agree,
but it doesn't surprise me the plagiarism that somebody, if a guy's getting rich off of this, mm-hmm. someone's gonna go, well, I thought of that first.
Yeah,
look, here's the proof, here's what I wrote, and look how similar his idea is. Mm-hmm. But I'm not getting millions of pounds off it, so you know, why should he?
Yeah, but that's the thing, it could even be something else that's the same, if not similar. Like, maybe not that bit about the thetans.
Oh, it could be, yeah.
There could be some other big old paragraph.
Well, when we open it up next time, we'll have a look.
Yeah, so allegedly, plagiarism could come into that from a book from 1951.
Okay.
Hubbard introduced a device called an e-meter that he presented as a way to reveal an individual's innermost thoughts. But,
right.
Turns out, an e-meter actually does absolutely nothing, and it has the same components that are used in lie detectors.
Right.
So these e-meters that they're telling you is for something.
It's just measuring your heart rate and your perspiration and,
yep.
and stuff like that. So okay, fair enough.
Allegedly tricking people with that e-meter. So the Hubbard Association of Scientologists, also known as HAS, was the only official Scientology organization with training procedures, doctrines, and standardized and promoted through this organization.
Right,
so they were like the main hub. The administrators and the auditors were not permitted to deviate from Hubbard's approach. So this is where it starts ramping up, and he's getting a more kind of widespread, right, how do we get people to be Scientologists? Let's kind of brainwash.
It's them. Yeah, almost like he's starting to become a bit of a control freak at this mm-hmm. point.
Yes. Yeah, it's getting that way.
Yeah.
So branches or orgs, organizations, were then known as franchises. So it's a bit like fast food chain restaurants.
Yeah, so a franchise of the church mm-hmm. would have to pay him so much to say that we're the new Church of Scientology in this area.
Yep.
Is that right? Yeah.
That's exactly what you've got there, mate.
Sorry, didn't get in your head.
So each franchise holder was required to pay 10% of their total income to Hubbard's central organization. They were also required to find new recruits known as raw meat.
Right.
But were restricted to providing only basic services. Because it's obviously the main central hub,
basic.
The Hubbard Association organization. They were the only ones that could do all this kind of rules and regulations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
These other people were just minions, just told
just
the basics.
Preaching whatever they've been told from above.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, obviously, they're religious services, aren't they? That they're offering. So, you know, saving your soul and stuff, come to our church every Sunday or whatever, whenever their holy day is. Mm-hmm. Pay us money, probably. You know, even like Church of England and Catholic Church and stuff rely on like donations. They pass around a little plate, don't they? And people put their hand in their pocket and put their. And I guess that's how it started for him. You know, that would have been
and
kickoff point.
This is where it really starts ramping up because auditing is using the e-meter. So they were essentially like using a lie detector on people and then telling them, oh, we know your inner thoughts, you're lying to us, and started brainwashing them. I mean, that's how they were recruiting people into Scientology.
Oh,
because
okay.
People would panic and start being like, oh, how can I, what can I do? I don't want to be evil, I don't want to. And then they'd rope them in, and this actually became their most successful way of getting new recruits or raw meat.
That now starts to make a little bit more sense. Years and years ago, I watched, I think it was a Louis Theroux documentary on Scientology.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know that much about Scientology, and that documentary sort of made me not want to know too much about Scientology, because they were, or one guy in particular was trying to, he was attacking Louis,
mm-hmm.
going, what are your crimes? What are your crimes? We'll find out what your crimes are, what you've done wrong, you know? You can't hide from your own conscience and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And Louis's like, no, go away, I'm Jewish or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
but that sentence makes it more, it explains why that guy was doing that, because, yeah, it's that attack.
Yes.
Strategy, isn't it? Mm-hmm. We know you've done wrong. You can only reach your salvation through us.
Yeah, that's right. And while you speak of attack, you've pretty much segued this into the next bit, which is perfect, by the way. So speaking of attacking Louis Theroux, attacking these people, Hubbard actually started to advise his auditors to wear, is it clerical collars?
Yeah.
So, and dress as clergymen.
Like dog collars. Like
religious collars, and dress as clergymen. So if they were arrested for being aggressive and disturbing the peace or whatever, they could then sue the police and the government for being molested as a man of God, right?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. Yeah, there are plenty of little loopholes like that in the law, aren't there? So, yeah.
And L. Ron Hubbard has been quoted as to saying, allegedly, don't ever defend, always attack. So this is, again, where it starts ramping up. And another quote here was, always find or manufacture enough threat against them to cause them to sue for peace. Interesting little quote there.
Yeah.
Because you still see that today.
It is interesting. One of the things that I just want to just touch on just very briefly
mm-hmm.
is when I was reading through the Gospel of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, and they were talking about their approach to converting people to Pastafarianism.
Yeah.
There was a paragraph labelled Scientologists, and the paragraph was just, don't bother.
Yeah.
They're too deeply rooted in what they've got going on. Just don't bother.
Yes, very deeply rooted and very loyal.
Yeah,
a lot of them. So an individual is not to set up their own group if leaving Scientology. They will be completely shut down. So this is another set of parts of their rules. I'm just kind of going into the very... I'm tickling the start of the religion.
It's basically our way or the highway.
Yeah,
and the highway doesn't look too good.
And these are kind of like the rules that they've set because they were getting a lot of hate and a lot of feedback. So they were just kind of like, right, how do we defend ourselves here? How do we make ourselves look good, smelling of roses?
It seems to me that a lot of the inner workings of Scientology is very secretive.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've just got this nice little rose garden that they put out the front for everybody to look at.
Yeah.
Oh, come into the garden, it's fine.
Yeah.
Just don't go into the basement.
That's actually a very good analogy. That's actually a very good one for Scientology.
Yes.
And that will completely make sense as well in part two when you hear some of the crazy stuff that I've found. So another rule is the purpose is to harass and discourage rather than to win in a court of law, things like that.
Right, just discredit the other side.
And Scientologists have also said that the law can be used very easily to harass, and enough harassment on somebody who is simply on the edge anyway, well, knowing that he is not authorized, will generally be sufficient to cause his professional decease, if possible, of course, ruin him utterly.
Yeah, ruin his reputation.
Yes.
To completely discredit them in court.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's better than winning the case, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and it's a running theme. It's a running theme.
Is it?
It's,
yeah.
it's almost like if we can't get our way, we're going to find loopholes and we're going to do what we can till we get our own way.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the way. And obviously we've mentioned Hubbard was given back the rights to Dianetics and things like that.
Kind of like smear campaigns, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, yeah, it is. It's real, it's kind of like nasty.
Yeah, very much so.
And I know I keep saying it, but honestly, there are some stories in part two coming up and you will be flabbergasted at what they get away with and what they do to people. And it's insane that
already flabbered, mate.
But I should just mention as well, just a side note, that when Hubbard started this Scientology, really started ramping it up.
Yeah.
All the independent Scientology churches and the Dianetic groups were either driven out of business or they were absorbed by Hubbard's organizations.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
So
it
eventually became one big thing. So Hubbard marketed Scientology through medical claims as well, such as getting rid of polio. So...
What?
Yes, yeah, I'm not even kidding you. For adverts...
Scientology is responsible for getting rid of polio.
They're
is that
saying,
what they're claiming?
No, it was basically a clever scheme to get people to join. Is they were saying, I'll say allegedly because I don't want to misquote it, but there was adverts and campaigns saying things like, "Oh, if you have polio or if you have this disease or that disease, join Scientology. We can make you healthy again,
or we can cure you."
Yes, is generally one of the things that they were doing to recruit people.
Fair enough. Okay.
So. Again, painting a picture of how great these people are.
Yeah.
And L. Ron Hubbard especially. So Scientology was rising by the year. And by 1957, Hubbard was paid by a percentage of the church's gross income, which was $250,000 a month.
A month?
I'm pretty sure it was a month. Because it was 10% of... No, that was 1957, so it wouldn't have been a month. Maybe yearly. So 250... Yeah, that
yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah, a year would make
he
more
He was getting
sense,
more
yeah.
money as the...
1957, yeah, $250,000 a year would be like getting millions these days, wouldn't it?
It equivalates to 2.6 million.
Yeah.
But that would have been yearly. He started getting more money in the 60s and 70s. So yes, my apologies. In 1957, it was about...
Okay, yeah.
Quarter of a million.
To be fair, I wouldn't say no to a quarter of a million a year in 2023.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but that is crazy that this guy, on average, nowadays is at the time, in the 50s, he was getting roughly 2.6 million a year.
Yeah.
For, so Scientology is actually banned in certain parts of Australia, Victoria being one of them.
Right, okay.
And the reason they were banned was for brainwashing, blackmail, and extortion. And they were actually banned in 1965. So I don't know if that law still upholds now.
Probably.
But in 1965,
Australia's
they were...
They're pretty stubborn.
Yeah.
They want to be.
And then we actually followed suit. The UK banned Scientology in 1968.
Oh, is it actually banned here?
Yes.
I kind of wondered why we don't really see Scientologists wandering around the place in the UK. It is predominantly America that
yes.
has seen reports of Scientology.
So I should have written it down, but the which is a running trend of mine. But when I was doing the research, I remember seeing something about that the ban was on foreign Scientologists coming into the country.
Right.
So if me and you decided to become Scientologists...
Launch our own church, that's fine.
That's fine. It's you can't have...
We're just
these...
not then allowed to go to Australia or, yeah, the
yes,
Americans are not
yes.
allowed to come here. Yeah,
that's pretty
enough.
Much
yeah.
what it is.
Okay.
So Hubbard was then forced to tighten internal discipline within Scientology and required members to disconnect from any organisation or individual, including family members and friends, deemed to be disruptive or suppressive to the religion. So this is where you start getting people turning their backs on their families and things
yeah.
like that for religion. He also required Scientologists to write knowledge reports on each other, reporting any transgressions or misapplications of Scientology methods. So basically internal snitches
yeah.
on each other.
Yeah, they're just double-checking each other's work and leaning over each other's shoulders and whatnot. And yeah, breathing mm-hmm. down their necks. So it's fair enough, I guess.
And that comes back in part two, another nuts story. I cannot wait to do part two as well.
Okay,
mate, so.
Fair enough.
I do apologise because part one has been a little bit all over the place.
Yeah, Scientologists, don't attack us yet. We still have another part to go through.
Wait for part two before you attack us because you will be angry. So, hey, they did it, not me. So,
we're just reporters.
Yeah, this is just our interpretation of the research we found that's already out there. Yeah, so
there you go.
Don't hate the messenger. So Hubbard then had a long list of punishable misdemeanors, crimes and high crimes. This would be for people deemed an enemy of Scientology, which would include loss of property, injuries, being sued or destroyed publicly, which again refers back to Louis Theroux and some of the stuff that he saw. So again, really nice people.
Loss of property, they just literally take your house away from them if you 100%. Annoy them.
Yeah, yeah, because a lot of them were in communities. So your neighbours and everything.
Oh, right, okay, they didn't necessarily own the house in the first place. It would have been,
a lot of them, it was kind of given to them as a gift or, you know, they would build upon this certain settlement or neighbourhood.
Probably not necessarily given to them. They probably paid for it duly with the offerings.
That makes sense. So in March 1966... The Guardian's office was created, another sector of this organization. So in 66, the Guardian's office was created, which dealt with all external affairs, public relations, and legal actions, gathering of intelligence on perceived threats. As negative media attention gathered, they issued legal paperwork, sometimes up to 40 in a single day.
Wow.
Of handing out this legal paperwork because of people saying bad things about Scientology.
It's kind of like they're starting now to create their own little CIA and Black Ops groups and stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah, mate.
I mean, that is one of the things that I have heard about Scientology, is they allegedly have their own sort of Black Ops militia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this seems to be the creation of that, doesn't it?
Yes, it does indeed. And, so we're getting towards the end now. So Hubbard stepped down in 1966. So he actually he wasn't full on. He was still involved, but he stepped down from being head guy in 1966.
Right.
And it was kind of run very wishy-washy by some close friends who were also Scientologists. I will find their names and put it out in part two because it will make sense. I've completely forgotten. But they didn't run it very well for about about 15 to 20 years or so.
From your research, I mean, so why do you think that he stepped down? Was it just because he'd made enough money and got himself a big enough name and he decided, well, you know, I don't really need this anymore. I don't care what happens to it. I'll just let it sort of wash away.
I think it's a combination.
Was he trying to close it down or?
Scientology?
Yeah.
No way.
He just wanted it to run as its own entity.
So it's a combination of things. So from some reports, I've read that because of his shady past and things like that, he was becoming bigger than the religion.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Okay,
And he was getting a reputation for being known as that crazy guy. And so he
didn't want to be the next Al Capone, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So then the actual reason that he stepped down was to focus on his fleet of ships.
Oh, my grief.
And he wanted to sail to other countries working on the teachings of Scientology. So, again, he wanted to expand all this stuff.
But doing it in international waters where he can't get done for it because maritime law doesn't govern religion in international waters. So, can't get prosecuted for it.
So he was doing this for a few years. And as, like I say, I know I keep saying it, but allegedly he was doing it in a way that was morally incorrect. So because of this, he was...
Surprise compared to the rest of the story.
Yeah. So he was losing a lot of senior members of the church by either demotion or just leaving in general. They'd had enough.
Right.
And this was brought up to 1980 and 1981. So this was at an all-time low. People were leaving, getting demoted. that Scientology was in a bit of a weird place, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
I said,
yeah.
It was at that point, it was kind of run by three people that weren't L. Ron Hubbard. And I'm pretty sure it was a husband and wife. And a lot of people were losing faith in Scientology.
Because so, the main man wasn't there anymore.
Yeah, yeah, that definitely had something
so,
to do.
So, yeah, it would have been on the rocks a little bit, wouldn't it?
And that happened for years. They were just like, wow, we're not really feeling this anymore. And then some people...
We haven't
people,
got our profit anymore.
Yeah, and some people also got demoted. And then they were like, well, I haven't really done anything, so if I'm getting demoted for that, then I'm out. If,
yeah, it's
so he was
enough, yeah.
Either way, he had a rapid decline of members.
Mm-hmm.
So by the end of 1981... One man rose to prominence, taking on all of Hubbard's responsibilities. Hubbard's closest aide in the C organization, 21-year-old David Miscavige. And that okay. is where I'm going to end today's podcast.
Oh, you're tickling our teats and wait until next week to milk us.
Indeed I am. Yes, because part two, I'm going to get into... David Miscavige and what we know as Scientology in the modern days of today.
So what we've got so far,
yes,
L. Ron Hubbard, the history of L. Ron Hubbard, and yeah, okay, the guy wasn't a saint.
Mm-hmm.
He was a prophet, but he wasn't a saint. you know, he's got some misdemeanors in his past. Wasn't making much money out of sci-fi novels and short stories.
Mm-hmm.
So someone said, why don't you make a religion out of your ideas
yeah.
as a sci-fi writer?
Mm-hmm.
And he's done that in possibly one of the most savage ways I've ever heard of.
Well, we're getting a naval fleet.
making up his own militia.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a naval fleet so that he can carry on his promiscuous ways out in international waters and whatnot. Then he's sort of... maybe made enough money, he's had enough of it, maybe he's just fed up of being on the wrong side of the law or whatever. You know, he's got a few quid in the bank now, he's just like, right, you tell you what, Scientology can carry on, but I don't really want much to do with it. And mm-hmm. it's kind of like, was sat on the rocks for a few years.
Yeah, but don't forget he also...
And then this David, what was his name?
David Miscavige.
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 Not
yeah.
Miscarriage.
No, Miscavige.
Miscavige.
Yeah.
And he's now seized the position of,
he's taken it upon himself.
He's the new prophet, basically.
Yes.
And then next week is where we actually explore what he's done to Scientology.
Yeah.
How it's progressed through the last 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm. All the crazy stories that you hear about today. His association with the celebrities.
Also, yeah, there's quite a few celebrities that are into Scientology.
A few celebrities you wouldn't necessarily think or know of as Scientologists.
Right.
I'll also go into just some of the crazy things that have happened under David Miscavige's version of Scientology. But also, let's not forget that L. Ron Hubbard had his wife as the leader of an organization that infiltrated the American government. And was the biggest... essentially heist in government history.
Yeah, trying true to, espionage, really, wasn't it?
Yes. So it's not even painting him in a bad light. He done all these things, and it's been noted down and recorded. This is all true. What I've read is true. I might have jumbled things up and got it in a bit of a weird order and stuff, and my bad.
Typically Josh.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a podcast, my side to start a podcast without messing things up. But I'm just kind of... trying to paint a picture of the creator of Scientology and what he was like.
The history.
So when we go into part
the vision
two,
that he created as opposed to what it is these days, and that's what we'll be covering next week.
That's right. So just remember the name David Miscavige for
David
part
Miscavige.
Two. And I promise you, part two is so much juicier. It is so juicy.
Fair enough. Well, we're not doing the paranormality scale this week because that would be too shortcoming. So we will do the paranormality scale on Scientology next week. If you want to have a guess for yourselves as what that rating is going to be, then please do in the comment section.
Yeah.
Write us an email. Don't write us an email if you're a Scientologist.
No.
Please don't. I don't want to be inundated by emails. But until next week when we go into the new version of Scientology.
Scientology 2.0.
I've been Pirate.
I'm Josh.
And this has been Paranormality UK. Ta-ta.
Ta-ta.
Hey, guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. They ship Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT.
What makes a great pair of glasses? At Warby Parker, it's all the invisible extras without the extra cost. Their designer quality frames start at $95, including prescription lenses, plus scratch-resistant, smudge-resistant, and anti-reflective coatings, and UV protection, and free adjustments for life. To find your next pair of glasses, sunglasses, or contact lenses, or to find the Warby Parker store nearest you, head over to warbyparker.com. That's warbyparker.com.
This is a PSA, or public sock announcement. Experts have declared Bombas socks as the best way to warm up chilly feet. These pairs are super cushy, soft, and designed for maximum coziness. Plus, for every pair purchased, another pair will be donated, so someone in need of essential clothing can stay warm this winter. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST at checkout.
Americans are durable. We take pride in hard work and high quality. American Giant makes durable, quality clothing right here in the USA. Because what we wear reflects who we are. When you buy American Giant, you're not just wearing the best clothes money can buy. You're helping keep jobs and pride in your own backyard. Premium clothing built to last decades, like it should. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code RIGHTHERE24.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.